I'm in WPR's Wausau studio talking with Joe Jenks, an 18-year veteran of the folk music circuit, well-known for his solo work as well as his time with the trio Brothers Sun. Welcome, Joe.
Thank you, Dan. Pleasure to be here.
It's great to have you here today. And given that we're here to talk about your music, how about we start off with a song?
That'd be great. This is a song called, interestingly enough, Let Me Sing You a Song. It's one that I wrote the morning that Pete Seeger died, about his life and his work and his influence on me. You've asked me here to tell you about my neighbors and my friends, to talk about the who and what, the where and how and when, but I won't give you anything you don't already know. But if you like, I'll sing that list of songs before I go. Let me sing you a song about the people that I love, the poets and philosophers, the workers and the wanderers, the ones who walk the picket lines, who dare to stand and fight, and the ones who hold their babies close and rock them through the night. Well, you say it's un-American to do the things I do. Well, I sing for justice and liberty and civil rights, it's true. Well, I say it's un-American to ask me how I vote, how I pray or what I believe. Here's a song I wrote. Let me sing you a song about the people that I love, the poets and philosophers, the workers and the wanderers, the ones who walk the picket lines, who dare to stand and fight, and the ones who hold their babies close and rock them through the night. If I had a I'd have her in the morning, I'd have her in the evening, all over this land. I'd have her out of danger, I'd have her out of mourning, I'd have her out of love between my brothers and my sisters, all over this land. Well, if you want to send me to prison, I guess that's the way it'll be, 'cause I won't give you fodder for your paranoid machine. If the price of my silence is shackles, well then fellas, take me away, for I will live to sing again and rise with a brand new day. Let me sing you a song about the people that I love, the poets and philosophers, the workers and the wanderers, the ones who walk the picket lines, who dare to stand and fight, and the ones who hold their babies close and rock them through the night. Let me sing you a song about the people that I love, the poets and philosophers, workers and the wanderers, the ones who walk the picket lines, who dare to stand and fight, and the ones who hold their babies close and rock them through the night. Yes, the ones who hold their babies close and rock them through the night.
That's great, Joe. Wow, very nice. I love the sound of that instrument. Will you tell the folks listening what instrument you're playing right now?
I am playing a bouzouki, which is a sort of a Greek version of the octave mandolin that's usually just a bigger instrument than the octave mandolin, but it's usually tuned like an octave mandolin, which is an octave lower than the standard mandolin. Uh-huh. And so this is a full-scale length bouzouki, but it's built in the shape of a small parlor-sized guitar. The luthier that I commissioned this instrument from, Baird Blaine, down in Fayetteville, Arkansas, and I had a conversation about the sort of tone that I was looking for out of the instrument. And basically, I said I want a bouzouki with more chutzpah, and this is what he came up with. And I've had this instrument now 8 years, and I absolutely love it. But it's people are like, is that an 8-string tenor? I'm like, no, it's actually a bouzouki in disguise. But for what it's worth for you and for the listeners of Simply Folk, if you're ever traveling through a TSA security checkpoint with one of these, I do recommend that you refer to it as a mandolin, not a bouzouki.
Yes, I'll bet that's true. Yes.
That's useful.
Well, it was great to hear that on you play that, because you play that a lot on your latest album that came out this year, Poets, Philosophers, Workers and Wanderers, which what you just played was kind of the title cut from that. And there's a lot. One of the things I like about folk music is the variety of topics that we get to hear about and sing about. That, and you kind of continue that tradition in this CD. I mean, you've got songs out there about friendship and love, workers and veterans, journeying for new opportunities, and returning home. There's even a song about the Holocaust. I mean, that's a wide range of material. How do you decide what you're going to write about or what songs you're going to cover?
Interestingly enough, I would say in some ways it's the same rubric that goes into both in terms of discerning what songs I'm writing and what songs I'm going to cover. And that is to say it's part intent and part completely involuntary. Mm-hmm. Something strikes me emotionally and I'm trying to capture it. I'm trying to capture that emotion. So music comes first for me. Because I think music captures emotion in a way that language doesn't always quite get. Language comes from the left brain. Music comes from the right brain. Songwriting is an integrated art form where we're using both halves of the brain to get there. But fundamentally, I'm tied into narratives that move my heart. And so once a story has really grabbed my heart, something I've heard in the world or something that I've experienced, then if I'm trying to write about it, I have to find the musical emotion first and then fit the words into it after. And sometimes the song that another songwriter has written will grab me in the same way. It just it bypasses the gatekeepers in the left brain, the sensors that discern logically what is or isn't. And it kind of bypasses those gatekeepers and just lands squarely in my heart. And so of all the covers that I put on this record, in addition to the original songs, every one of them is a song that came out of the same place in my heart as if I had written it.
Sure.
And it was just, I heard something and went, oh, wow, that's great. But interestingly enough, even though I write the music first, I really am tuned into narrative. And I would say some of my perspective on narrative is influenced by Carl Jung and by Joseph Campbell and their reflections on the nature of narrative and storytelling as a quintessential piece of the human experience. You know, Jung said that dreams are the personalized myth. Joseph Campbell, being, you know, a famed, you know, sort of anthropologist and mythologist, really, a student of global mythology, said the opposite. And he was also a student of Jung. He said myth is the depersonalized dream. And furthermore, ritual is myth enacted. And so I think the role of the storyteller, the narrator, through history is an important role in human development, and I think it remains so, and the oral tradition remains important. And what I love about folk music and why I touch on so many different subjects and why I encourage friends and colleagues to do the same thing is because I think there are ways that we capture some of the stories that are missed by mainstream media.
Okay. Well, how about, I mean, we've been talking about the CD here. Why don't you play another song from that?
Sure. Totally different direction with this one. My mother was a big fan of folk music, but she was also a fan of big band era music and a lot of the Broadway tunes that became part of the American Standard Songbook and were turned into jazz songs. And as I was going through a difficult time in my life, I think I just dipped my ladle back in that well. That I was a lot of music I was exposed to in my childhood. And the song emerged. It's called Given Myself to Love. myself to flights of fancy to see what's around the next bend. I've given myself to things that are broken to put them together again. I've given up hope and I've given my best. It all depends on the day. I've given up so many things that I wanted, and still the sun rises each day. Some measure life by their losses and gains. For them there is never enough. But I measure life by the hearts I have known, for I've given myself to love. I've given the money I had in my pocket to someone in obvious need. I've given myself to the kindness of strangers, and I've given thanks for good deeds. I've given solace and I've given comfort. I've given a hand to a friend. I've given myself to the things I believe, though sometimes I don't know to what end. Some measure life by their losses and gains. Each choice has a price. I've given some people more than they bargained, and others still cause for concern. I've given myself to the fire of passion, and I have been willingly burned. And just when it seems that the story is over, all that remains is goodbye. There is one thing of which you can be certain. I'll always give love one more try. Some measure life by their losses and gains. For them there is never enough. And I measure life by the hearts I have known, for I've given myself to love. Some measure life by the hearts I have known, for I've given myself to love.
Thank you. That was very nice. I'm glad you played that song because I don't know if this is true for you because you wrote the album, put it together. But for me, the two songs on that album that sort of serve as emotional anchors for me as I listen to it anyway is that song and the song Going Home. And the Going Home song is, I perceive it anyway, as being sort of an outward looking. You're kind of looking at the world around you, where this one is kind of more inside, kind of internally looking inside you. And it strikes me that's a balance maybe you tried to get on the album. Is that something you tried to do as you put it together?
Very much so. Part of the folk tradition and the narrative tradition for me in music is that we're documentarians as writers. And sometimes the camera lens is pointed outward.
at the world around us, and we're recording stories and narratives of things going on around us, and sometimes the camera lens is pointed inward. And a mentor and music teacher of mine told me once, you have to do two things to create a good performance. You have to invite your audience to take a risk. And you have to take a risk yourself during the performance so that your audience knows that it's safe to take a risk. You know, so if you're presenting ideas and asking them to latch on to new things musically or ideologically or emotionally, you have to demonstrate a willingness to take risks. And I find that there's a certain kind of vulnerability and transparency that isn't, whether it's in the external narratives or the internal narrative, that isn't navel-gazing, it isn't self-indulgent, but it just opens the door and gives people permission to have an experience, to grieve a loss, to celebrate something they're excited about, to feel empowered, to feel like they can take agency in their own life in some way, or that they just have permission to sit for a moment and notice the weight of some burden that they have been carrying, you know, and just release it for that moment of the song. And so, yeah, it's a very intentional choice, but it also is in some ways a little bit random. Like I go through the world, I'm on the road sometimes 300 days a year. I never know when I'm going to stumble on a story that cracks my heart open or whether I'm going to walk into, you know, an unexpected moment of my own tenderness, you know, and just have my own heart broken. The Buddhists talk about the idea of bodhicitta, which is that the broken heart and the awakened heart are one and the same. And I think when I'm writing music, whether it's external or internal narrative, I try and come from that place with that awareness that you know, sort of higher levels of consciousness almost require us to be willing to let our heart break a little bit in order to have compassion for other people and for ourselves.
Sure. Well, one of the things I've noticed on your albums in terms of that, you mentioned the word empowerment, which caught my ear as you were talking, and that outward facing is you sing a lot of songs about justice, worker justice, and you even have an album that's a live concert you did on worker justice called Rise as One, and so that seems to be a topic that you come back to quite a bit with your music. Why is that? Why is that something that's central to yourself musically?
Well, I was born and raised in Rockford, Illinois, which some of your listeners may know and some may not. But at the time that I was growing up in Rockford, we were tied for 10 years running with Flint, Michigan, as the worst place to live in the United States. Fortune magazine had a list of the top 50 and the bottom 50. And we were the worst of the worst, tied with Flint, Michigan for 10 years.
Wow.
And I think when you grow up with that sense that anywhere you can go from where you are is better than where you are, which I have to say in defense of Rockford is not true. I have been in many places. I will not name them lest I cause dissent among your listeners and those who may be catching this online. But I have been to many worse places than the town I grew up in. But when you grow up with that idea that you're already at the bottom of the food chain and that the only direction is up, I think it makes you ask questions. Why is my hometown the bottom of the food chain? Why are we listed as the worst of the worst? What's so bad about the place I live? You know, who's you know, sometimes you have to reject the premise of the question. So who asked the question and chose to answer it in that way? And I think just that, even as a young person, that consciousness was with me of like, well, you know, what does this mean? And I'd walk to school and see stuff out on people's front lawns. And, you know, there was like twice a year when the garbage collectors would take anything you put out, couches, refrigerators, whatever. They would just, whatever you put on the curb, they would take. And I would think, man, these people must have come into money. They're getting rid of some good stuff, you know? And like 20 years later, I watched Michael Moore's film, Roger and Me, about Flint, Michigan. And all of a sudden I realized, oh, no, those people were being evicted. Every day that I was walking to school and seeing these things, I was seeing families being evicted from homes and from apartments because the economy was so difficult at the time. So many industrial jobs had left. And this is kind of an essay answer, I apologize. But Charlie King, great songwriter, wrote a song called Our Lives Are More Than Our Work, and Our Work Is More Than Our Jobs. And he talked about, in that song in some ways, the identity that exists within the crafts and the trades of doing good work, but having a piece of your soul invested in it. It isn't just a means of acquiring income. It's a piece of who you are. And when somebody takes that job away, they haven't just taken an economic engine from you. You know, they haven't just closed a plant. They have taken a piece of your identity. And so I think part of my being tuned into, you know, economic justice, social justice, workers' issues, human rights, civil rights, just stems from growing up in that environment and trying to answer the question, why do other parts of the country look down on the place that I live in? And and that led me, like I say, the broken heart and the awakened heart being one and the same, that led me to a place of really seeing the depth of narrative that exists in the lives of working people all over the place, whether it's fishermen in Seattle or, you know, miners in Appalachia or mill workers in the upper Midwest or, you know, just anywhere I look, you know, textile workers of old on the East Coast, you know, I see the rich stories of life and the deep lessons that are to be learned there. And so I think these themes carry through. And they were certainly themes that were relevant to a lot of my mentors and friends who helped me along my way, including people like Pete Seeger and John McCutcheon and Cy Conn and Holly Near, you know.
So. Wonderful. Well, how about we get a song maybe along those lines?
Sure. Grab a sip of water here. This next one is a song that I wrote for my friend Phil, who was a master welder with Norfolk Southern Railroad for many years and worked for a couple other railroads, including the Denver and Rio Grande at one point. And he just taught me a lot about taking pride in a job well done. And he said to me once, if you can't be proud of the work that you're doing, you should be doing different work or you should be doing the work differently. But no working person should spend a day of their lives doing work that they can't be proud of. If you have a minute, John, I sure feel like hell. The union vote is coming up and things aren't looking well. You know I'd like to stand up for the things that I believe, but it seems that my life's not as simple as it used to be. I was born in Tulsa back in 1951. They say that I could drive a spike before I learned to run. In a land of dust and corn, the rails spoke a steel truth. The men that kept them working were the heroes of my youth, for they sang, come little, little, I do, I day. Working for the railway, come little, little, I do, I day. Working for the railway. When I was a young man and I thought to run away, a freight train it came through our town and I got on one day. Santa Fe. And everywhere I listened, I could hear the railway workers singing, come little, little, I do, I day, working for the railway. Come little, little, I do, I day, working for the railway. In 1969, I met a soul to match my life. But her father said that I must have a job to take a wife. So I looked around at all the work that I might do, found that it was time for me to sing the only song I knew. Hey, come little, little, I do, I day, working for the railway. Come little, little, I do, I day, working for the railway. Now we have 5 children and they bring me joy each day.
the bills keep getting higher and I've nothing left to pay. The union says that we must strike and stand up, don't you see? But I've just got too damn many people who depend on me. Here come little, I day, working for the railway. Come little, I day, working for the railway. Every worker is the welfare of his kin. And to walk away from pay that's good, it seems, is such a sin. The bosses, they don't understand how hard I work each night. And I've got mouths to feed, and so I do my part till daylight, singing, come diddle diddle, I do I day, working for the railway. Come diddle diddle, I do I day, working for the railway. Come diddle diddle, I do I day, working for the railway. Come diddle diddle, I do I day, working for the railway.
Nice. That was good. Thank you, Joe.
Thank you.
So you talked about growing up in a town that was struggling, at the very least, in Rockford. But then you also studied a music conservatory, right? Do I understand that correctly? So it's that seems like a roundabout way maybe to get to folk music. Is that true, or is that a straight line for you?
Well, it's a pretty straight line for me. I started playing out. I wanted to back up for just a second. When you asked what influenced my perspectives on social justice or social consciousness, I would be remiss if I did not speak of the Catholic clergy that were my educators, the nuns and the priests that were really central to my education when I was growing up. All the way from some of the nuns that I had in grade school to a class I had in high school, my junior year in high school, called The Christian Call to Peace and Justice. And it was a year-long course, 5 days a week, in which we looked at the intersection of faith and social justice and the imperatives that are brought forth not just in Christianity but in many global religions toward an awareness of the needs of people around you and your obligation to help meet those needs.
Well, we've talked before a little bit, off the mic a little bit, about spirituality and how that has influenced you and your life. I mean, how does that impact your music and your songwriting, do you think?
I think it's an undercurrent, a lot of people listen to my music and they hear spirituality in it immediately. I think a lot of people listen and they hear social justice. A lot of people hear the love songs or the personal thing. I think in some ways, a good song is a little bit of a Rorschach test where, you bring something to it. The art is interactive. Even though it's been created, all art is interactive. You look at a painting and I look at a painting, and you and I are each looking through the lens of our experience and whatever's going on for us at that point in our lives. And so we each look at the same piece of art and take something different from it. And I think the goal as a songwriter in some ways is to be very precise and very specific and at the same time just a little bit vague. Sometimes the more specific a song, the more powerful it is. But you have to leave room for other people to co-create with you. Other people have to be a part of that creation with the state of consciousness or mind or emotion that they bring to it. So the same song can be received by some people very, very differently. And I think I was aware of that nuance as a writer, even as I headed off to conservatory. And it was my mother's influence that really put me in a really great music school. I wanted to grow up and be a folk singer. I was clear about that by the time I was about 12 years old. I remember standing up at the dinner table, and I'm the youngest of seven children, so there were still a number of folks there at the table, even after some had gone away to college. And I stood up and declared that it was my intent to become a professional folk singer. I'm sure my mom thought it was cute and, laughed and figured I might change my mind a few times before it was of consequence. And I'm pretty sure my dad thought this was a contradiction in terms, and that sooner or later I was going to have to choose between growing up or becoming a folk singer. But to his credit, in the years that he was living, he died when I was 19, he never missed a performance. You know, he was very supportive in very tangible ways. And you can look at what people say, you can listen to it, but I think the greater tell is watching what people do. Mm-hmm. And ideologically, he didn't understand my choices, but he absolutely showed up and supported them.
Oh, that's great.
Including moving me into my dorm room at college. And my mom basically just said, if you're going to be a musician, go after it. Stick both feet in the water. Go for it 100%. Get to a good music school. Learn everything you need to learn to be a versatile player and performer. And then many doors open for you.
Good advice.
Yeah, she was very adamant that I go to music school, that I find a good conservatory and take it seriously. So, but I, you know, went to Millikan University in Decatur, Illinois, great alma mater, and they really did right by me. I got a great education there.
Well, good. Well, how about we use a little bit of education with one last song? Is that all
sure?
Right?
Sure. This is called "Everybody Sings the Blues." Well, I may not be the smartest man that ever walked on earth, and some of what's gone well for me might be an accident of birth. Oh, but deep inside the mystery surrounding me and you, something I have come to know and hold as deeply true. Well, you may be a woman from the right side of town, going out evenings in the finest of gowns. All but one thing's for certain, you know it ain't new. Sooner or later, everybody sings the blues. Well, you may be erudite or a real cool cat, high-priced jet setter, going this way and that. Shoes. Sooner or later, everybody sings the blues. Oh, lonely. We all get lonely sometimes. There's nothing anyone can do. But hang on for just another day. Be ironic. You may be a clown. You may swear that you'll never wear your smile upside down. All but one thing's for certain, whether you win or lose, sooner or later, everybody sings the blues. It's one thing's for certain. No, it ain't news. Sooner or later, everybody sings the blues. Sooner or later, everybody sings the blues. Great.
That's great. Thanks, Joe.
Dan, thanks for having me. What a pleasure to be here with you on Wisconsin Public Radio.
It was great to have you. Thanks.